Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 15, Text 41. Ahu Sariram Ratam Indriyani Hayan Abhisun Mana Indriyesham Bartmani Matra Dishanam Chasutam Satvam Brihad Bandunam Isha Sristam Ahu Sariram Ratam Indriyani Hayan Abhisun Mana Indriyesham Bartmani Matra Dishanam Chasutam Satvam Brihad Bandunam Isa Sristam Ahu Sariram Ratam Indriyani Hayan Abhisun Mana Indriyesham Bartmani Matra Dishanam Chasutam Satvam Brihad Bandunam Isha Shristam Vaishnavis. Ahu, it is said, Shariram, the body, Ratam, the chariot, Indriyani, the senses, Ayan, the horses, Abhisun, the reins, Mana, the mind, Indriya, of the senses, Isham, the master, Vartmani, the destinations, Matra, the sense objects, Dishanam, the intelligence, Cha, and Sutam, the chariot driver, Satvam, consciousness, Brihat, great, Bandunam, bondage, Isha, by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Shristam, created. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Transcendentalists who are advanced in knowledge compare the body, which is made by the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to a chariot. The senses are like the horses. The mind, the master of the senses, is like the reins. The objects of the senses are the destinations. Intelligence is the chariot driver, and consciousness, which spreads throughout the body, is the cause of bondage in this material world. Purport. For a bewildered person in the materialistic way of life, the body, the mind, and the senses, which are engaged in sense gratification, are the cause of bondage to repeated birth, death, old age, and disease. But for one who is advanced in spiritual knowledge, the same body, senses, and mind are the cause of liberation. This is confirmed in the Katha Upanishad as follows. Atmanam ratinam vidhi, sariram ratam evacha, buddhim tus saratim vidhi, mana pragraham evacha, indriyani hayan ahor, vishayams teshu gocharan, sod hanvana param apnoti, tad vishno paramam padam. The soul is the occupant of the chariot of the body, of which the driver is the intelligence. The mind is the determination to reach the destination. The senses are the horses, and the sense objects are also included in that activity. Thus, one can reach the destination, Vishnu, who is Param Padam, the supreme goal of life. In conditioned life, the consciousness in the body is the cause of bondage. But the same consciousness, when transformed into Krishna consciousness, becomes the cause for one's returning home back to Godhead. The human body, therefore, may be used in two ways: for going to the darkest regions of ignorance, or for going forward, back home, back to Godhead. To go back to Godhead, the path is Mahat Seva, to accept the self-realized spiritual master. Mahat Sevam Dwaram Ahova Mukte. For liberation, one should accept the direction of authorized devotees who can actually endow one with perfect knowledge. On the other hand, tamo dvaram yosi tam sangi sangam, if one wants to go to the darkest regions of material existence, one may continue to associate with persons who are attached to women. Yosi tam sangi sangam. The word yosit means woman. Persons who are too materialistic are attached to women. It is said, therefore, atmanam ratinam vidhi sariram ratam evacha. The body is just like a chariot or car in which one may go anywhere. One may drive well, or else one may drive whimsically, in which case it is quite possible that he may have an accident and fall into a ditch. In other words, if one takes direction from the experienced spiritual master, one can go back home, back to Godhead. Otherwise, one may return to the cycle of birth and death. Therefore, Krishna personally advises Ashradadana Purusha, Dharmasyasya Parantapa, Aprapyamam Navartante, Mrityu Samsadavartmani. Those who are not faithful on the path of devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of the foes, but return to birth and death in the material world. Bhagavad Gita 9.3. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, personally gives instructions on how one can return home back to Godhead. But if one does not care to listen to his instructions, the result will be that one will never go back to Godhead, but will continue life in this miserable condition of repeated birth and death in material existence. Mrityu Samsadavartmani. The advice of experienced transcendentalists, therefore, is that the body be fully engaged for achieving the ultimate goal of life, Swartikatim. The real interest or goal of life is to return home back to Godhead. To enable one to fulfill this purpose, there are so many Vedic literatures, including Vedanta Sutra, the Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita, Mahabharata, and the Ramayana. One should take lessons from these Vedic literatures and learn how to practice Nivritti Marga. Then one's life will be perfect. The body is important as long as it has consciousness. Without consciousness, the body is merely a lump of matter. Therefore, to return home, back to Godhead, one must change his consciousness from material consciousness to Krishna consciousness. One's consciousness is the cause of material bondage, but if this consciousness is purified by bhakti yoga, one can then understand the falsity of his upadhi, his designations as Indian, American, Hindu, Muslim, Christian, and so on. Sarva padi vin nirmuktam tatva partena nirmalam. One must forget these designations and use this consciousness only for the service of Krishna. Therefore, one takes advantage of the Krishna conscious movement, his life is certainly successful. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasad Pradalaya Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityananda Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gaura Vani Pacharini Nyavashesha Sunyavadi Paschachari Shacharini Pancha Kapa Dhruvischa Kripa Sindhavyavacha Patitanam Pavanevya Vaishnavibhya Namo Namaha. So Prabhupada says, in other words, if one takes direction from the experienced spiritual master, one can go back home, back to Godhead. Otherwise, one may return to the cycle of birth and death. So it's never a good idea to return back to the cycle of birth and death here in the material world. And it's a particularly bad idea to have to do that during the Kali Yuga. Because, you know, we're living in an age now where it's just all sinful. You know, if somebody comes back to the cycle of birth and death, takes birth again in human society, you know, in their next life, what's going to happen? They're just going to be totally introduced to engaging in sinful activities. Right? So, you know, it's never a good thing to have to come back to the cycle of birth and death, but it's been said that, you know, taking birth as a human being in Kali Yuga without Krishna consciousness, it's like a one-way ticket to hell. You know, there's so much sinful activity going on, and you're going to, whoever that person is, you're going to get involved with it. So there's no way that at the end of this lifetime you're going to be able to take birth again, even as a human being. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, it explains that if one dies in the mode of goodness, then they go to the higher planets. If one dies in the mode of passion, then one takes birth again as a human being on earth. But if one dies in the mode of ignorance, you go to the animal kingdom, or you go to hell, or both. You see? So that's what, you know, people are looking at if they, you know, if they miss, as Prabhupada said, this opportunity of the Krishna conscious movement. Prabhupada said, therefore, one should take advantage of the Krishna conscious movement. His life is certainly successful. But if one doesn't take advantage of the Krishna conscious movement, his life is going to be unsuccessful, very unsuccessful, very unsuccessful. Because, you know, without having engaged at all in any Krishna conscious activity, what do you got? You just got all these reactions to the sinful activities you've been engaging in for the however long your life was. And as I said, it's guaranteed you're going to go to, I mean, these are not my words, it's right out of the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita. That person is going to go to hell, have to suffer in different hellish conditions, and then they're going to be an animal, or maybe they'll get, you know, a chance to be a human being again, but take birth in the same situation again. So really, this is, you know, the only hope for human society is this Krishna consciousness movement. You know, people don't realize that, you know, everybody's trying to be happy, but it's the illusion is so great. People don't realize that sinful activities and becoming happiness doesn't add up. You know, it doesn't equal each other. It's the opposite. You know, the more sinful you are, the less happy you're going to be. But people don't understand that. Actually, these days, people don't even have an idea of what sin is, really. Remember, there's that one, they're kind of like the people, and Prabhupada tells that story, Magrari the hunter. And he tells that, you know, different occasions, but on one occasion, you know, the way when he was telling the story, he goes, so Narada Muni goes up to this Magrari the hunter, and he goes, you know, why are you half killing these animals? Don't you know it's a very great sin? And Magrari goes, sin? What is sin? You know, so people these days are like that. You know, it's like that Magrari, he didn't even have what to speak of. He didn't even have the idea of that he was doing the wrong thing, with the speak of feeling some guilt about doing the wrong thing. It didn't even occur to him. Maybe this is the wrong thing to do. So it's like that. There's practically not even a conception of that something's sinful. You know, at least it's moving in that direction. Of course, there's Christianity, and they have some idea of sin. But I think in Christianity, there's only really one sin these days, and that's not being a Christian. But putting that aside. So, yeah, there's not much understanding of this idea of, like, sin, you know. But according to the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, you know, three modes of material nature, Prabhupada explains that the only people that could be happy here in the material world at all, any kind of happiness, is if you're in the mode of goodness. And the mode of goodness is characterized by you know, sense of happiness and a sense of knowledge. But that's because the people in the mode of goodness, Prabhupada explains, are more or less, you know, free from sinful reactions. See? So the more free from sinful reactions you are, the more you're going to feel happy in the material world. Of course, it's not like, you know, perfect happiness. It's you know, material happiness, which is inebriated. But anyway, but that's the basic principle. But, you know, people not understanding that there's really, they're acting totally in illusion. You know, whatever they're trying to do to become happy, it's actually having the opposite effect. There's that verse in the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Mogasham, Moga Karmani, Moga Gyana Vacheta Saha, Rakshasim Asarim Chaiva, Prakatim Moinim Shuta, that in this deluded condition, all their attempts for, all their fruitive activities, all their attempts, everything they do is destined to moga shots. It's all bewildered illusion. It's destined to failure because, they have no idea what's going on. But the problem is, though, that just because you have no idea what's going on, that doesn't mean you're free from the reaction. Just like if you drive down Venice Boulevard here or just one of these streets and, you go through like a red light and there's a red light camera. So, you might think, I didn't know, but the camera got you. You get the ticket in the mail, and if you try to blow that off, then, eventually that doesn't work either. You're going to be someplace and, you're going to get stopped and, especially Sankirtan devotees, they're going to ask to see for your ID. They check and see if you have any warrants out for your arrest, and then you're going to haul your way to jail. So the point is, there's a system. You can't break the laws. These laws of, nature, they're the laws of Krishna. You can't break them. You can't engage in all these sinful activities and think you're going to get away with it. You might, maybe you can get away with it in human society, but you can't get away with it in, universal society. Krishna's government is perfect. It's not imperfect like the government here of the United States. You're going to get you're going to get caught. You're going to have to pay for all the things you do wrong. People, it's all invisible. They can't think. They can see that it's like physical laws, but there's like a subtle energy that's where there's laws, and they can't they can't conceive of that. But there is, and they're held responsible. Another analogy that came to my mind was just say somebody's like 20 years old, a healthy person, and all they do is eat junk food and they don't exercise. So like at 40, are they going to be healthy? Very unlikely. Because why? Because there's physical laws. There's laws that, govern conduct the way the body develops. Even if you are healthy to start off with, if you just eat junk food and overeat at that, and then you don't do any exercise, say, over a period of 20, 30 years, there's no way you're going to be healthy when you're 40, 50 years old. See? Because why? Because you're going against the laws of nature that govern the way the body operates. But the opposite of that, say you're, 20 and you're kind of in reasonable health and you eat really good food, you don't overeat and you exercise, can you expect to be healthy at 40 and 50? Yeah. Yeah, you can, because you're going. You're living in harmony with the laws of nature that govern the body. So in the same way, there's laws, of like the way a human being is supposed to behave and not supposed to behave. And, these people, what to speak of, like following, they don't even know following the laws, they don't even know what they are. People don't even know, they understand, as I started off by saying, that it's a sin it's sinful to eat meat. It's sinful to engage in illicit sex. It's sinful to engage in intoxication and gambling. There's not even an awareness, what to speak of, like an observance. See? And it's really like, still, they're responsible for that. And it's just like, the illusion is so, it's kind of like progressed to such an incredible degree that, people, as I mentioned in previous classes, they don't even, it's kind of like, it's the furthest thing from their mind. And even when they're confronted with it, they just can't, like, it's almost like they can't relate to it. Like I mentioned on these campuses, this group, PETA, Prevention, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, they roll out these video machines and they pay people a dollar. They actually pay them a dollar to watch a 4-minute video. And, even after watching that, it doesn't drink, like they just go, oh, okay. Because there's so much, it's like, we're just so much indoctrinated into like a culture of stupidity and ignorance that even, they're confronted with, the truth. Look, this is how these animals are treated. They're tortured, cruelly and inhumanely tortured throughout their entire natural life, and then they have to meet with the same cruel and inhumane kind of death. And if you're eating meat, you're an accomplice to the crime. By not being a vegan, that's their thing, or at least a vegetarian, you're an accomplice to the crime, you see? Which is true. They're perfectly correct. But most people just think, okay. It's so, like, foreign to them. They can't even pick up on it. And, You know, what to speak other things, abortion, like that. I mentioned that in another class. That there's a video silence screen. It shows what goes on. But, you know, it's like it's the illusion is so great that it's even when people are confronted with how horrible these things are, it's hard for them to just kind of like, just kind of, what you'd think would be the proper response would be like, wow, no way, I'm forget it, I'm finished with that. I mean, they just kind of like, they go into denial, or I don't know what exactly what's going on in their heads when they, you know, but it doesn't seem to have the desired result. They don't kind of get it. But so anyway, but as I said, it's kind of like they're responsible. They're responsible, and they're going to have to suffer as a result of, you know, engaging in all these sinful activities. The other day we were out at this one mall in Orange County. What was it called? The Block at Orange. And before we started Sankirtan, I had to go to the bathroom. So, this is one place, D&B, whatever that is. You know, I said, I'll go in there. It looks like a nice big restaurant or something like that. I'll use their bathroom. So I walked into that place. It was actually D&B is like in big letters, and then in little is Dave and Buster's Sports Bar. It's a sports bar. So first thing you see when you walk in there, you're all looking this way behind me, is there were four gigantic screens. They were the size of the balcony down to the floor, to the where that arches, to where the balcony starts here. That's how big these screens were, and there were four of them, literally. And each one had a different sports event on it. One had a college basketball game on it. One had an NBA game on it. One had a college football game on it. Had an NBA, a national, an NFL game on it, you know? And, like, these people are just, like, it was a beautiful day. You know, it was, like, 12, 1 o'clock. It was sunny. It was warm out and everything. It was a beautiful day. But then all these, it's like, dozens and dozens of people just sitting in there, you know, drinking and looking at this big, huge screen. And I just, wow, this is crazy, man. I actually was thinking, like, maybe I shouldn't even bother to go to the toilet in here. I felt like I didn't want to go to the toilet in that place. But I'm already in here, so what the heck. So I just figured, so I asked somebody, where is the toilet anyway? So, you just got to go down there. So I walked in a bit further, and in the other section of the place was like a video type of thing, you know. And it wasn't a casino because it's illegal, but it was like all these video games and, like, and I felt like, oh, my God, this is like getting from bad to worse, you know. It was just more out of touch with reality. It was just, you know, all these video games, and people were just kind of like, they're mesmerized by the whole thing. They're mesmerized by this all this sense gratification. So, you know, that's what's going on. You know, I remember this one thing. Papa once was in a park in Denver. I think it was Denver, Colorado, and they're going for a walk. And he made the comment something to the effect that, you know, yeah, these people work hard and they make this nice, nice park, you know, but they're so much in the mode of passion and ignorance, they can't come and they don't come and take advantage of and enjoy it, you know. So, but here we are, you know, the devotees, mode of goodness at least, and we're out here. I think he gave that example of the snake and the mouse. You know, the snake is in a basket and the mouse is in the basket, but the snake doesn't eat the mouse right away. He waits, he lets the mouse or the rat, whatever it was, chew a hole through the basket, and then when he gets kind of close to getting out, when he's kind of, so it's really weak, the snake just eats the mouse and just pops his head through and leaves, you know. When he's, so it's you know, like that, they can't, unfortunately, they do all this hard work to make all these nice facilities, and then because of their consciousness they can't even enjoy it. See, because if you're engaged in sinful activities, it means you're going to be in the mode of passion at best, or in the mode of ignorance. And according to the Bhagavad Gita, there's no happiness for people in the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. You know, what to speak of, you know, spiritual happiness is not even material happiness. There can't be. That's just that's the way the whole system works. See, so they, even though they're, you know, trying so hard, struggling so much like that, they're doing it against the laws of nature. They can't actually be happy, because you can't be happy if your mind is absorbed in the mode of passion and ignorance. The only way you can be happy in the material world, aside from even Krishna consciousness, if you're in the mode of goodness. And mode of goodness means that you're more or less free from reaction to sinful activity. See, so it's, once again, the whole thing is doomed to failure. So, you know, basically, we're their only hope. The Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada says here, the only one should take advantage of this Krishna consciousness movement, and then his life is certainly successful. So, you know, we're really the only hope for human society. That sounds like, ooh, you know, kind of a lot of responsibility, but that's really, you know, how it is. Just like Prabhupada was the only hope for us. I mean, somebody could say, well, ultimately, Krishna, it's only by Krishna's mercy that anybody comes to Krishna consciousness. But it seems that, like, Krishna works through instruments. He works through people, you know, contemporary, alive people. Just like, you know, I mean, Krishna didn't just, like, make some arrangement by which everybody just started becoming interested in him directly. No, there was a devotee. A devotee came, Prabhupada, and you know, he made a lot of sacrifice, and he came over here and he, you know, made an attempt to give us Krishna consciousness. And, you know, as a result of that, people have come to the Krishna conscious movement. You know, as that verse, Brahmananda Brahmate Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prashade Vai Bhakti Lada Beach, that after wandering throughout the universe, one who's fortunate, you know, he comes in contact with Guru, and by coming in contact with Guru, he comes in contact with Krishna, and then his life is successful. So it's like that. Both things have to be there. Sure, of course, Krishna's mercy has to be there, but Krishna's mercy comes through the Guru, comes through the, you know, the devotee. So, you know, now we're the devotees. We're aspiring. We're trying. That's we have to do it. We have to go out there. We have to go out there and try to, you know, give people this knowledge. And we're doing it already. And we're, you know, doing a nice job. And we should just have to. That's you know, the only thing to do, really, just as much as possible. Get out there as much as possible. Harinams, book distribution, prasadam distribution, inviting people to the temple as much as possible. Get the books out there. Get the knowledge out there. You know, because that's the only hope for these people. And, you know, ultimately, they got to get Krishna's mercy. But, you know, this is, as I said, it's the same thing. We have to go out there and do it. And then Krishna will reciprocate. He'll respond. He'll, you know, if we make the effort, then Krishna will reciprocate by enlightening the general populace from within by his causeless mercy. There's one purport in the fourth canto where Prabhupada says that the pure devotee is always thinking about how to deliver the fallen conditioned souls. And Krishna, being pleased by, you know, his effort, his attitude like that, he responds by enlightening the general populace from within by his causeless mercy. So that's kind of how it works. You know, the devotee has to go out there and try to his best ability, and then Krishna is pleased with that. You see, it's not a mechanical thing. It's a relationship between the devotees and Krishna. Krishna's pleased by our efforts to, you know, help people become Krishna conscious, and then he'll enlighten them from within by his causeless mercy. In other words, they'll come forward, they'll take interest, and they'll start participating in the Krishna conscious movement. And, you know, and then hopefully it could be really, you know, wonderful. It's the sky's the limit as to what could happen, because, you know, Krishna is unlimited. You know, you can't say, oh, the movement could only become this big or that big. Anything could happen. By Krishna's mercy, anything, you know, some incredible things could happen. One other point, somebody could say, well, you know, sometimes, you know, we try to distribute, like, the movement, you know, distribute a lot of books. Sometimes we're giving out books very indiscriminately, and sometimes we could see that the books wind up in the garbage and like that, which is true. But actually, that happened even during the time of Srila Prabhupada. About a few weeks ago, Siddhanta was showing this video where Pragosh and Ramaswara were on it. And so Pragosh was saying, at one time they went to Prabhupada. In 1976, they actually said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, sometimes, you know, we go to when we distribute books, sometimes the people throw them in the garbage. The janitors come back and, you know, we buy the books back from them, so that, you know, people sometimes throw the books in the garbage. And Prabhupada, according to Pragosh, his immediate response was, what can we do? They throw their babies in the garbage. You see? So, you know, in other words, we have to try to distribute the knowledge as responsibly as we can, you know, being as discriminating as we can. But it's hard. You know, you only got, like, seconds sometimes with people, and, you know, it's very hard. They're not exactly cooperating. So you just have to do the best we can, you know, to get the books out there. Try to, as I said, distribute them as the most responsible and, you know, intelligent way as we can. But, you know, and if something like that happens, okay, well, you know, Prabhupada wasn't upset by that. He understood that's, you know, it's going to happen. It's Kali Yuga. So, let's see what we're doing here. I'll stop there. Anybody have any questions or comments? just waiting for the microphone here. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Prabhu. I just have a comment. I hope you don't mind. In the last part that you just mentioned about people throwing the books out, a few times, you know, when we distribute, there are actually people who come out. If you give, I say, no, I don't want it. They say, I don't want it. Because if you give me that book, I will throw it out. And a few times you hear that. But this particular time, I choose to say something. So I said, if you don't mind, let me ask you a question. You said you will throw out the book. Why would you do something like that? You don't even know what's inside the book. So I will just recommend that you, before you say something like that, you pay attention, because there's something very valuable in that. And because otherwise you sound very uneducated person. This person went like his jaw, he dropped his jaw like that. He said, thank you for telling me that. You know, like, you're just saying something that people, they don't even notice. They just say something quickly like that. Mm-hmm. But in the other sense, now another question is a comment. You mentioned that Mrigari the Hunter, in this particular time, Mrigari the Hunter.
Oh, yeah.
That he said, what is sin? What is sin? They don't even know. So I had a niece who has a husband who is a hunter. He hunts for pleasure. He doesn't even hunt because it's just a hobby. And I was just thinking, how can I give this person some little bit piece of Krishna consciousness? Because you need to be pious. But then in just reflecting in the story of Mrigari the Hunter, that actually Krishna consciousness is a very mystical thing. That, like in the case of Mrigari the Hunter, unless a pure devotee comes and wants to give it, when Krishna wants to give it, you never know. It can be to anyone. Because I'm thinking, how could a person who is a hunter, like in this particular case, can get Krishna consciousness? Because in order to get Krishna consciousness, you have to be like a little pious. But it doesn't work like that all the time. Just like in the case of Mrigari the Hunter.
Yeah.
When a pure devotee comes, when Krishna decides that this particular soul needs a special mercy, he gives it. So we're just taking the risk as Sankirtan devotees or book distributors to go to anyone. We don't know anything.
You're right. Give everybody a chance. Yeah. And that they show their colors very quickly. You know. Bhakti Anthony, why don't you say something about Sankirtan? Bhakti Anthony is our newest Sankirtan devotee. He just started doing Sankirtan. This is completely unrehearsed and everything. I'm just getting him right on the spot here. I'm putting him right on the spot. He just started doing Sankirtan at the beginning of the marathon. So what do you think about Sankirtan?
Good.
Whatever you think.
Well, yeah, it's a pleasure going out with you, Brigupati Prabhu.
That's
very great. Going out with Bhakta Eric is very amazing.
Speaking of the microphone, what do you think about the activity itself? Are you having a good time out there? Is it horrible? Are you miserable?
Yeah, I'm having a good time. Yeah, it's pretty great. I meet a lot of really nice people, you know. Yeah, like Sachi was saying, you can really tell like who's pious and who's impious, because like a lot of impious people just automatically will like put their hand in your face and just say no and kind of like even run away from you almost. You could just tell like, oh, that's an impious soul, you know, he's not ready yet. So it's pretty interesting. I don't know what else to say. Hare Krishna.
Okay, that was good. Thank you. So anybody else had a question? I'm the Bhakti Prabhu. Comment.
Does somebody have a question? He can go.
Any questions before Amala Bhakta is asking? Any questions? One question here. Sure.
You were mentioning about mouse and the snake in the basket, and mouse eats it only when he has made a hole. So, like, how does it? Could you please explain how does it relate to life of a devotee or a non-devotee, like this particular analogy?
Yeah, they're working hard in creating all these facilities, and, you know, they don't even, like the mouse, he was working hard to get out of the basket, you know, but then he didn't get to enjoy his freedom out of the basket because he just got gobbled up by the snake and You know, so in the same way, they're working hard creating all these facilities for their enjoyment, but because they're condemned by the fact that they're in the lower modes of nature, passion, ignorance, they don't even get to enjoy them. But then we just come along and do sankirtan there. So like, since they work hard to produce these beautiful malls. Every mall I've been to over this marathon is like 100 times bigger than this temple and about 100 times more opulent. So they work really hard to produce the malls, but they're there and they're miserable there, you see. But we just go and do our sankirtan there, and it's kind of like they've worked hard to set up a nice arrangement by which we can just go and meet the people. So something like that. You know, they're doing all the hard work, but it's only the devotees, the people who are in the mode of goodness or engaged in devotional service, can actually properly utilize all these facilities that they're working so hard to create, and which they can't enjoy because they can't enjoy anything because their minds are in the mode of passion and ignorance.
Thanks for a nice class, Prabhu. You had mentioned in the course of your talk that when a person is in the mode of goodness, he doesn't get any negative or painful reactions, and that's true to some extent. Nonetheless, there is a reaction that does come to a person in the mode of goodness. Quite often, people who are in the mode of goodness and do humanitarian or philanthropic or medical or a psychological type of help for people, quite often, if they do some good, if they do some patchwork and they help a person to get on his feet and to feel better, quite often they are praised and they're honored or glorified, applauded, thanked, and it gives one a feeling of pride. And this false pride, you begin to think that you're actually superior, you think you're better, you think you're greater, because most people are not getting that particular type of treatment. Consequently, as a result, one becomes attached to that praise, attached to that. It's a pleasure, because everyone has come into this world to feel superior, to feel higher, to feel greater, to be like a god. So in a sense, I get to feel like a god. That's an entanglement. That's an attachment. That keeps me in the material world. So instead of becoming liberated and leaving this and ultimately saying bye-bye, no more miseries, he experiences, of course, the three kinds of miseries of the body, miseries from other living entities and from catastrophes and calamities and so forth. So he has to go through those kinds of miseries, which generally many people have to go through. You get old, there's some miseries there. You get diseased, there's some miseries there. We see doctors, we see people who are in humanitarian type of situations who do get a certain amount of suffering. But the worst suffering that I'm trying to bring out is that because of the attachments to all the pleasures that they get, from the honor and the distinction and the glorification, it becomes a means by which they then want to experience that again, you see, because it has a pleasure to it. And therefore, they have to take another birth again.
Yeah, Prabhupada says that, right, Matt?
Yeah, so then there's birth, death, disease, and old age again. The real solution is not just to go to the mode of goodness, but to get to the position of pure goodness, in which actually one does the work as a loving service to Krishna, does not take any pride in it, does not feel superior to what he's doing. No matter how much honor, distinction, glorification he gets, he considers that all to belong to Krishna, and because Krishna is the one who's making it happen, and therefore he's completely free of that and can then go back home, back to Godhead.
Jai, thank you. That was a great comment. Hang on a second. So today's the last day of the year. So it's a good day, like New Year's resolutions and everything. So when the devotees used to give the sankirtan results to Prabhupada, you know, they, I don't know when they did it, at the end of the year, whenever they did it, Prabhupada would say, very good, double it. So that's not easy to do, double it, but at least we should try to do in this coming year as well as we did this year and even a little bit better. So that's something to, you know, good meditation for the new year to try to increase our sankirtan. Chantraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
And hold it.